Communicating with others is often challenging, and if you add dementia into the mix, it gets more complicated. Larry Mueller, and thanks for joining us here on WPR News. We'll be talking about how to talk to someone who has dementia with our guest, Rachel Wunderland. Back with us, she's an internationally recognized dementia care expert and educator. Rachel has a master's in gerontology and is a three-time published author with Johns Hopkins University Press. Rachel is the owner of Dementia by Day, a dementia care consulting firm and education company. At noon, we'll turn to dental care and the latest technology that can help you keep your teeth clean. But right now, we want to hear from you. How do you communicate with your loved one who has dementia? What has been your experience? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. Or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. Rachel Wunderland, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Hi, thanks for having me back.
So let's talk about the challenges. What challenges do people with dementia face when they try to communicate with others?
It can range. So the person living with dementia may have some form of aphasia, which affects their ability to communicate verbally. It may also be that they communicate verbally just fine, but what they're saying may not always be what they mean or what the person who's caring for them hears. So the challenge is often for the caregiver for the person living with dementia and how they're going to respond if the person living with dementia says things that in our reality aren't true or aren't on our current timeline or what have you.
Yeah, I'll probably bring my brother Mitch into this conversation. He passed away a few months ago with dementia.
I'm sorry.
And it can be tough sometimes. Why is patience, I had to learn patience, important for care partners or for loved ones visiting someone in a community?
One of the key things here, I think, is with patients being able to take a step back and realize that the person you're talking to, they're not asking you the same question 3 million times to frustrate you, even though it will frustrate you. They're not remembering that they asked that question many times before. So it falls upon really the caregiving partner to be the one to accept the fact that they've been asked that question a million times, but it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and talking with my brother, I was irritated at first, and then I thought, well, wait a minute, you're the lucky one. You've got a great job. You got, you interview people. You have a nice living here. So, hey, don't feel sorry for yourself, I think is what I finally had to say to myself, and I think that actually helped me.
It's hard. It's really hard. And I tell caregivers frequently, dementia care communication, it's sort of like learning a different language in a lot of ways. We teach something at Dementia by Day, my company, called Embracing Their Reality, which is this idea that we're going to do whatever's true for the person living with dementia, no matter where it is. Take the word lying or therapeutic fibbing or whatever out of your vocabulary, throw it out the window, and focus on, okay, what's true for them? Let's do that.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good way to look at it. We had many conversations about his car and how his car was doing, and I had sold his car many months earlier. But yeah. I never discussed that with him. We just talked about the car, which he loved that car. What are the best environments for a conversation with someone with dementia? And maybe places to avoid as well.
Well, for one, I would never try to bring somebody living with dementia back into our reality. A physical location you would not want to bring them to, for example, is the cemetery to prove to them who died, or their old house or apartment to prove to them that they don't live there anymore. We really want to avoid the proving part. Mm-hmm. And I think that's hard for a lot of people because, you know, when you're in a discussion with somebody, say your spouse, you know, you want to be correct. You want to be the person who wins that argument. You're going to present a bunch of facts that support your end of the argument. But when we're talking to somebody living with dementia, we have to remember that their facts are no longer necessarily our facts, at least not on this timeline. And so we have another phrase we call timeline confusion, which is this concept that someone living with dementia may be very much living in a nonlinear timeline. They may feel like they are 20, 30, 40 years younger than they currently are. And sometimes we'll have trouble placing loved ones or friends on their timeline because of this. So they may see, you know, a sibling and think, well, this can't be my sister. You know, she looks like she's 70 years old. So my sister is only, you know, 30. So this must be our mom. This must be our, you know, our grandmother, our aunt, whatever.
Well, what are some topics of conversation that you might brainstorm ahead of time?
We always recommend bringing something to do with a person living with dementia. So this could be as simple as a bunch of socks that you all need to fold and sort. So asking the person for help instead of saying, hey, do you want to fold socks? Because no one wants to do that. Saying, can you help me with this? Can you help me put these socks together? Another option would be to bring something. These are online. They're called finishing lines or finishing lyrics. And so it's literally a book of lyrics or quotes that the person will fill in the blank for. So, you know, stay off of my blue suede shoes, right? So the person would say blue suede shoes. And being able to even fill in those blanks makes someone feel really successful and, you know, happy. So if you can bring something with you to do with them, that's going to be a great conversation starter and take some of the pressure off of you as a caregiver trying to brainstorm, oh my gosh, what am I going to say to this person, you know, when I'm there?
Yeah, I found a little scrapbook that had all of the pictures of his class from grade school with fairly large photos. And so I took that in and I said, I can't figure out who all these people are. Let's try and figure this out. And we spent about 45 minutes going through that list. And then that led to some conversations about the individuals who were in each photo. And
right.
It was fun for him. It was actually fun for me.
Right, exactly. Yeah, you came with a plan and executed on that plan. And I think that's really, really helpful.
Yeah. Well, let's talk more about embracing their reality. Is this school of thought different from other methods out there?
Yes, actually, yeah. There are a number of schools of thought. I think most people in the industry agree at this point that the idea of reality orientation, saying like, don't you remember you're 90 years old and you live here now? I think most people agree that that's not good. But other schools of thought, like the validation theory that a lot of people subscribe to, say, okay, sure, yeah, you kind of want to go to their world, but you don't want to lie to them. And so that's where embracing their reality, I think, really lives and exists in this gray area, because I'm saying, hey, let's take the word lying. Let's get rid of it. Let's toss it out of our vocabulary, because when we're lying, we're typically doing something deceitful on purpose in order to win an argument or whatever the case may be. But when we're talking to somebody living with dementia, all we want to do is make sure they have a better day and make sure we have a better day. And so when we focus on, wait a second, let's not worry about what is lying and what's not lying. Let's worry about what's true for this person. You know, who do they believe is still alive? Where do they believe they live? How old do they believe they are? All these things can exist and be true in their reality. And living in that world with them is going to be such a better experience for everybody.
Our guest today, Rachel Wunderlin, internationally recognized dementia expert, care expert, and educator. And I hope you'll join in with your own thoughts on this. Questions or comments or maybe an experience to share. The number is 800-642-1234. Or you could email us the email address talk@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. For people with dementia, time isn't linear like it is for those of us without. Are there ways to partners can help with timeline confusion? You were talking a bit about it, but expand a bit.
Sure. So I always bring up this one example, which is the movie The Notebook. It came out in 2004, so it's been out for quite a while. And in this movie, I think they do a really, really bad job with dementia. So the concept is this guy comes to visit his wife every day at her senior living building. She has dementia, and she never knows who he is, according to the plot of this film. So one day he goes in, suddenly it's like dementia is like a hat, right? It's almost like she took off the hat. She knows who he is. She's like, oh my God, how long before I forget again? He says, last time was only a few minutes. And she's like, oh, okay. And then 5 seconds later, she's really confused again, has no idea who he is. That's a super Hollywood version of dementia and really doesn't work that way. What would probably be more likely is that if she had trouble placing him on her timeline, she may see this older gentleman and think, this guy looks familiar. He sounds familiar. I know that I care about him. He must be my dad. He must be my uncle, right? Or someone else important to me, instead of just like, oh my God, I've never seen this guy in my life. I have no idea who he is.
I would approach Mitch when I walked in. I said, your brother Larry is back to talk with you about whatever, and just in case he didn't know.
Yeah, one challenge that, that could have presented is that if he was like, what do you mean? Ah. What do you mean you're my brother? My brother's 25 years old. What are you talking about? So I often encourage people to introduce themselves, but leave the relationship out. So you could say, hey, it's me, So I would walk in, hey, it's Rachel. And Rachel can be whoever to that person. So at the end of his life, my grandpa had some cognitive impairment at the end of his life. And when I went in to see him, he said, who are you? I said, I'm Rachel. And he was like, okay, great. And then another time I went in and he said, who are you? And I said, he said, you're not my wife. And I said, that's true. I'm Rachel. And he was like, okay. and that was good enough, because I don't want to say I'm your granddaughter, because if he is already thinking, is this my wife? Well, probably we're not mixing up someone who's, in their mid-30s with someone who's in their 80s or 90s, early 90s, right? So I just let him tell me what our relationship is. And the important thing is, you're still important to that person living with dementia. They just might not be able to figure out why you're so old, They might not be able to figure out, how the heck are you? How are you, 70 years old when I'm looking for, a 25-year-old person?
Well, I like your approach better than the one I used. Although he did seem to respond.
I'm glad it always worked out. And, I don't want to, I think it sounds like you did a great job. It's a very nuanced approach to it, but it kind of keeps you from getting painted into a corner, accidentally, if he's like, wait a second.
Cheryl in Iron Ridge, we'll give you a chance to join in. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for taking my call. And the first thing I want to say is I have an experience with my aunt. And I'm just so grateful she remembers who I am, okay? And I spend the day with her for 2 days, but our history is my whole life. She was like a mom to me, okay? And all I have to say is listening to this program couldn't be more appropriate, because when you spend an entire day with somebody who literally will ask you the same question 15 times.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we lost her. It could be frustrating. I don't know if that's what Cheryl was going to say, but we lost her there.
Yeah, probably. It is. It's exhausting, you know. And also I want to say to her, you know, even if her aunt has at some point some trouble, quote unquote, knowing her, it's not that she doesn't know her. It's just that she can't place her in her timeline. So her aunt will never not know her. It just, it could at some point reach a place where her aunt can't figure out why she's a grown-up person, you know, and she's looking for a younger person. So it's not they don't know you. It's not they don't love you. It's just that they can't place you on their nonlinear timeline, just in case that happens. And it doesn't always happen.
Molly in Cassville will go to you. Hi, Molly.
Hi. I have a story just to reiterate about getting into their world with them. My mother had Alzheimer's for 11 years, and towards the last year or so, she would get sundowners in the evening where she'd get very agitated, and she wanted to go home. And home for her was her parents. And my mother was in her 80s. So they weren't there anymore. And my father's approach was to try to sit her down and say, well, Mary, this is your home. There is no home there. Your parents are dead. And that just did not comfort her at all. Mm-hmm. And what I would do is say, okay, we'll go home tomorrow. We can't go today because it's too dark outside. Why don't we start packing? And she would get very happy. We'd walk around the house, and she'd pick up a potholder to take and a a remote control to take, and we put it in a little bag, and she'd be happy for the rest of the night. By morning, she didn't remember a thing. And so we would do that every so often, or I'd say, what are you going to do the first thing you do when you get there? Or I'd make a joke about my grandparents about what they're probably doing right now. And it was more about comforting her, because she was afraid she didn't know this home of hers, and she didn't know why she couldn't go home.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Molly, thank you very much. You had the right approach, for sure. Thank you. Charles in Oshkosh, we will go to you now. Hi, Charles.
Hi, thank you. Great program. As far as people with Alzheimer's versus dementia, I get the impression dementia is actually worse. And also, the friend her siblings were all at Alzheimer's. Now they've taken away her ability to drive. The doctor has. I don't know. She's very upset and depressed about that.
So a couple of questions there. Thank you, Charles.
Yeah. So dementia is an umbrella term for a group of over 100 different diseases. So Alzheimer's is not worse than dementia. If you went to the doctor and the doctor said that you had cancer, your next question would be, what type of cancer? And the same thing can be said for dementia. So you would say, what type of dementia? Alzheimer's disease is the most common cause of dementia. It's not necessarily better or worse than other causes of dementia. It really depends on the person. With regards to driving, people losing their licenses, it's so tough, because think about how driving is related to your independence, right? And for your ability to leave the house whenever you want, go where you want to go. And so for a lot of people, losing that license is so tough for them and their feeling and how they feel about themselves and their independence. But we don't want to wait too long to take someone's license away. There are a few ways to do this. One, we don't want to explain to the person that we have to take it because they can't drive anymore. That's not going to work. I prefer a third-party approach, such as blaming the DMV, blaming it on the car and the mechanic, and saying, "Oh, it's at the mechanic's. You know, they need to fix it." And obviously, you've gotten rid of the car. when people are trying to decide, okay, do I take someone's license away? I like to call it the grandchild test. This is what people call the grandchild test, which means it's very simple. It goes like this. Oh, yeah, sure. I let my mom drive. Yeah, I mean, she knows how to get there. It's okay. Okay, great. Would you let her drive with her grandchild in the car? Oh, God, no. No, no, no. Then the answer is the license has to go, right? So if you wouldn't let them drive with their grandchild or another vulnerable person in the car, then the answer is that license has to go.
That makes really good sense. We know that friendship is important. Talk about the value of friendship, especially for people with dementia.
Friendship is crucial, and we see this a lot with people living with dementia and for their caregivers, is that other people pull away. So when someone gets a diagnosis, a lot of friends are like, ooh, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to say. Like, what if they ask me something and I don't know how to respond? And so they pull away from the person. And that is so a shame because then the caregiver also loses that person as well. Continue to spend time with people. Just because they're living with a cognitive impairment doesn't mean they're not there anymore. It doesn't mean, you know, they've gone missing, they're lost, or anything like this. You know, I think when someone gets a diagnosis, like a cancer diagnosis, there are a lot of people who will gather around that person, and the opposite happens a lot with a dementia diagnosis, and it shouldn't be that way because loneliness can really cause someone's cognitive impairment to speed up. Loneliness is a huge factor in someone's cognitive health.
What about care facilities? I mean, what should you be looking for if you it's now time for the person to go to your loved one to go to a memory care facility, let's say?
Good news. I've got two books with Johns Hopkins University Press on this subject. My most recent one is called The Caregiver's Guide to Memory Care and Dementia Communities. You can simply Google Rachel Wunderland and you'll find it. The short answer is, if you've been thinking about it, if you've been thinking about transitioning someone into memory care, it's probably been time. Because a lot of people will wait pretty long to transition somebody. And sometimes by the time they move that person, they don't get the same benefit maybe of the social experience that they would had they moved a little bit earlier. But even if that person's at home with you, making sure that you have help, like a home care agency, reliable couple neighbors, somebody to help so that it is not just all on the caregiver. Taking care of somebody living with dementia is very, very hard, and it is not the same thing as raising a healthy child, which is already really hard, right? That's already hard. But when you're raising a child, there is a community around that, right? There's a community that builds itself around that to some degree frequently. And when someone is aging and declining, we typically see the opposite of that.
It's a difficult thing. I've often wondered, and fortunately for me and my brother Mitch, the facility that he was in at the end, where people were really kind to him, didn't talk down to him, but mm-hmm. had fun with him. One of the people would bring in some drawing materials and sit down with him and draw when I wasn't there, or he was when I showed up. So I think that kind of attention is important. To sort of observe folks who are mm-hmm. at the facility. Here we are out of time. It has been a pleasure, as always, talking with you, and I hope you'll come back and be with us again. It's
absolutely.
It's been an important, and Rachel Wunderland is an internationally recognized dementia expert and educator. Just go online to Rachel Wunderland, and you're going to find her books and a whole lot more. Coming up, we're going to turn our attention away from dementia and Alzheimer's and take a look at your teeth. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News.